Patty Pigskin with Gary Somerville in association with DraftKings.
Hello and welcome to episode 38 of Patty Pigskin. I'm Gary Somerville. This week is a Shamrock Bowl special. The Dublin Rebels are going up against the Cork Admirals this Sunday in Talla Stadium, Dublin, in Shamrock Bowl 32. So, got to chat to both teams. Spoke to Andy Dennehy, quarterback of the Dublin Rebels. And I spoke to Stuart Donaldson, who is the club president of the Cork Admirals. I chatted to them about their thoughts on the game coming up and how they fared in their epic semi-final matchup. So, Irish-American football this week on episode 38 of Paddy Pigskin. Let's have it. For episode 38, the player dedication is a name you may not have heard of before. It's Bob Tucker. He was a tight end. He was born on June 8, 1945 in Hazleton, Pennsylvania. He played his college ball in Bloomsburg. He played for 11 seasons from 1970 to 1980 for the New York Giants and the Minnesota Vikings. Nice bit of trivia, he's one of the few Giants to play for the team in four different home stadiums. In Yankee Stadium from 1970 through to 1973, the Yale Bowl, the last five home games of 1973 and all of 1974. Shea Stadium, the stadium where the Mets used to play, they play in City Field now, in 1975. And Giants Stadium from 1976 to 77. Prior to joining the NFL, he played for several seasons in the Atlantic Coast Football League, including the Pottstown Firebirds and the Lowell Giants. He was inducted into the American Football Association's Semi-Pro Football Hall of Fame in 1982. And interestingly enough, he was also a biology teacher. So he includes two of my favourite loves, the New York Giants and biology. Stats-wise, he finished with 422 receptions for 5,421 yards and 27 touchdowns. So, episode 38, tight end Bob Tucker, this episode is for you. So let's crack on with the Shamrock Bowl loveliness of episode 38.
Yeah. Hey, hit records on my demo. Y'all boys not get the memo. I do not stay at the Intercontinental. And anything I got is not a rental. I own that motherfucker. Figured out this shit is simple. My stock been going up like a crescendo. A bunch of handshakes from the fakes. But nigga, I do not wanna be friends though. I tell y'all motherfuckers, man, this shit is not a love song. This a fucking stripper on a mink rug song. This a fucking boys forever hold a grudge song. Pop some fucking champagne in a tub song. Nigga, just because song.
Dang, what's the move? Can I tell the truth? If I was doing this for you, then I have nothing left to prove. Nah, this for me though. I'm just trying to stay alive and take care of my people.
My first guest on this week's show, episode 38, is Andrew Dennehy. Andy is the quarterback and offensive coordinator for the Dublin Rebels. He's going for his 10th Shamrock Bowl Championship this Sunday against Cork Admirals and the 3P for the Rebels. Andy, I know you're very, very busy preparing for the game. You said you put your dinner on hold just to talk to me. So thanks very much for coming on and chatting to me.
Thanks for having me. Yeah, it's sausages tonight, you know, which is always a special night. So you should feel privileged.
Anybody wants to know what the diet of champions is, Andrew Dennehy eats sausages and fucking potato wedges for his dinner at 10 o'clock. So, you know, who needs the TB12 method when you have the AD16 method? Yeah, exactly. First of all, congrats on getting to the final again. You came through, Jesus, sounded like an absolute slobber knocker against the Belfast Trojans, which, you know, from being personally involved in games like that, it always seems to be the case, just an absolute slugfest. So for people that don't know, it was a crazy game, came down to it pretty much the dying seconds on a fourth down punt play. You got the ball back, you converted with a very tight throw for a touchdown. So talk us through all that. It sounded like it must have been an emotional roller coaster of a game, was it?
Yeah, it was a bit. I mean, they got off to an early lead and then we kind of came back at them. And it was one of those games where the lead changed hands maybe four or five times over the course of the game. It's the sort of game I would have loved to watch, to be honest. But then towards the end, just after the two-minute warning, we were behind by 4 points. And I threw a pass into the end zone and I got picked. And the cornerback was ruled down at the one. which is a bit of a controversial decision because the Trojans thought he was in the end zone. I'm not sure, to be honest, but whatever, he's ruled down to one. So they started just under 2 minutes left, but we had three timeouts on their own one. The defense managed to hold them. They did get a first down, but not enough so that they did have to punt on fourth down with about 25 seconds left from their own 15, and a bad snap. The punter was getting a rush in his face and decided to run, and you know, we managed to tackle him. I mean, he almost actually got the first down on the run, but we managed to tackle him, which meant we got the ball on the 15-yard line with 15 seconds left. And thank God for that, because otherwise it would have been going home going, Jesus, we had a chance of winning there, and I threw a pick in the end zone. But, yeah, it was a great defensive stand, great special teams play to keep us in it, and then we got the touchdown pass right at the end of the game. So it was a total slobber knocker, and honestly, the Trojans are such a good team that if they had won, you know, on I would have been disappointed, but it would have also gone fair play to the Trojans. They're just an excellent team, and they deserve the win. But I think it's fair to say it's one of those games that genuinely could have gone either way. And in the last 2 minutes, you know, the amount of things that happened between a pick in the end zone where it looked like we were driving to a bad snap and a punt that got tackled, and then we scored the game-winning touchdown. It was pretty awesome.
Yeah, it sounded like an absolutely amazing game for neutral fans just watching there. And how did you feel after you threw that pick? Did you feel, fuck, it's over now? Or did you have a glimmer of hope in your defense that they could stop them?
100%. Like, as soon as it happened, obviously some people were getting frustrated, and I was like, it's not over. You know, there was like 1 minute, 55 seconds left, and we had three timeouts. So by my calculations, I think the Trojans would have needed about two first downs, which is a lot to ask. I mean, our defense was awesome. In that scenario, backed up on their goal line, you know, you can kind of start sending the house. You're expecting them to try and smash it up the middle. And our D is very good at stopping that sort of thing. And they stepped up and did a great job. So I knew it wasn't over, but I knew we were kind of in the, okay, this is the last gasp. I do believe we'll get the ball back. The question is where. If we get it on our own 30-yard line with 5 seconds left, you're probably going, Jesus, what are we going to do here? Like, but we got, I mean, to an extent, we got lucky, but it comes down to who makes the plays when they matter. Like, sure, back to, yeah, we got it on the 15, and then we still had to convert from there, like, and we did a great job of doing that. So, my point of view, I would never think it's over until the whistle's blown. You know, you always have to go, this is okay, this is now the new reality, this is the situation we're in, what, yeah, the hell do we do to end up winning this game?
Yeah, and I was even texting, like, I was kind of following whatever updates were available, and I was, you know, I was texting one or two people going, it's still not over. And, you know, a lot of people will say, 2 minute drill, you're down by 4 or 5 points in the NFL, who would you want? And a lot of people would say, you know, the likes of Aaron Rodgers, Brady. If you were to ask that question about who you want in the IFL, I'm sure a lot of people would say Andrew Dennehy. And just from being in a few huddles with you over the years and seeing your composure in the two-minute offense or the two-minute drill, was that something you repped, or is it just from years and years of experience and coming from behind to win at the depth? Did that kind of stand here, or was it something you really worked on just in case you really need to pull out of the bag at the
time? Oh, yeah, like, over the years we've repped two-minute drill to bits, but I mean, a part of it, yeah, definitely. I've played loads of games, so I've been in situations that are bad, and then when you get out of that and you end up winning, it sort of confirms to you then later on, after you play more games, you go, well, hang on, we've been in worse than this before and we've got out of it. So you know, you can have a bit of belief. You know, and I appreciate your compliment there, but honestly, I kind of wish I was the guy that you'd want in for the entire game. And I'm not just when there's like 1 minute left, you know. Maybe if we played a bit better earlier in the game, we wouldn't have been in if we didn't throw a pick.
Fair enough.
In the end zone, you know.
Yeah.
Whole team effort, honestly. Like, I mean, I threw that one pass at the end, but it took our defense and special teams and everything to get us the ball back. So yeah. I don't know. I think it's a team wide mentality. It's not.
Sure, absolutely. And fair play to Jonas. He went up there and made a fantastic play in the end zone with basically two guys on him. So hats off to that from a fellow receiver. That was a fantastic catch. So as I mentioned earlier, you're going for the three people. How do the Rebels remain so consistent? Like, year in, year out, they always seem to be there, the final four or in the final. And the Rebels always seem to have this knack of peaking at the right time. You know, you kind of, like, just personal experience have been an offense where we've kind of stuttered at the start. But as the season progresses, new players that may be in the squad start to gel in with the rest. How can you be so consistent and just keep peaking at the right time when it matters?
Well, I don't know how we managed to be so consistent, you know, to be competitive you know, over a long period of time. We've got good players. We're very fortunate with the players we have, and we've got some core players who've been with the team since forever, you know, like Simon Mackey, Ross McCooey, Steve Walsh, myself, Paul Grogan, and these guys who formed the backbone of the team. They've just been playing so long that sometimes one or two players being extremely good can change a team, you know. And if they were missing, we could go from being high up to being, you know, to struggling to win games. In terms of peaking, I think also because of that, because we've just historically had good players, it kind of, it's almost like going into the start of the season, there's a fairly good chance every single year that we'll at least make the wild card. You know, so if you know you're going to make the playoffs, there's less pressure to have your whole system installed by day one. You just need to have a reasonable amount to be functional, and you get through the preseason. As long as you lay down the sort of fundamentals that you'll build upon even as the season goes. So we tend to, personally on offense, I would install a lot, but by game one. But there's more and more stuff being installed as we go based on the pace and the uptake of the players. But everything new that we add is usually in some way based on the stuff that we did in preseason. You know, it's just like a wrinkle. So we might be quite vanilla in game one, game two, and then it starts to expand. And by the time we get to the playoffs, we will have had 8 games. And games are like, can often be your best training sessions. You know, you often get, we usually have great footage. You're up against a real opponent. The stakes are high, so you get to see what really happens under pressure. So by the time you get to the playoffs, it's kind of like you have this body of work, all those reps you got in game, all the film that you have to study and tweak, as well as the additional wrinkles you've been adding to the playbook. So there's this sort of natural, it works out quite well. You get to playoffs and you can expand a little bit what you do.
Yeah.
Normally, right? That's part of how we peak. The other thing I'd say is, though, it's probably more down to reps, because to be honest, I'm talking about expanding the playbook. I always believe that you run the plays that got you there. There's no point in just introducing a whole load of, you know, new plays just for the bowl that you think will work. If you've been playing, you know, at this point, we've already played 9 games this season. With the preseason and all the training sessions, those are the plays we run in those games are the plays we need to be running in the bowl on Sunday. Because that's what we've got thousands and thousands of reps, you know. You use the stuff that got you there, and it's just a buildup of reps over time. So probably, I think historically, the Rebels have lost more games in the first like 2 or 3 games of the season than in any other period, because we're usually a little bit too vanilla or maybe a little bit sloppy, rep wise. But as we go on the season, everybody across the board, as well as new guys gelling, everyone just sort of gets better.
Yeah,
and get smoother, you know.
Yeah, and the momentum keeps building off that. So some people have said you're actually past your prime. Now I've seen some.
Who keeps saying this? I've only heard people saying. Some people.
I actually have the names and addresses of the people who have been saying it. So I'll send them on to you later on. But it's almost like a running joke now at this stage. Every now and then you'll see a comment and. You know, from one or two people on social media, and they're joking around saying, people keep saying Andy's past it, and time again, he keeps proving them wrong. But, like, you've been in this game a long time, from very early days playing with the Dublin Tornadoes, wasn't it?
So, I didn't really play with the Tornadoes. I trained with them a bit when I was younger, but I wouldn't. But
you've been in football circles in Ireland for a long time. So you've been there, you've done it, you've gotten the T-shirt. How do you maintain that hunger every season? Like, apart from wanting to win more medals than your brother and head coach, Brian Denny, which I know that is a nice little rivalry going on.
That's mainly the reason.
How do you maintain that hunger, like, year in, year out? You just come back and you want to win again and go all the way. How do you do it?
It's just something that I love doing, you know. So it's not work. It's the opposite, actually. It's stress relieving. It's play, if anything. Like, obviously, it's, you know, there's a lot of effort involved in all that, but I don't consider it as like a chore. It just sort of comes natural. I know that sounds like a stupid answer, but look, I will say that part of it is trying to be physically in shape over time.
Yeah,
it's not my head. I'm round as a shape, you know. So I'm not physically in shape, but you know, I'm in shape enough to do what I need to do. But like, honestly, I turned 40 a couple of weeks ago, and I've noticed over the past couple of years that when I get a knock, it either takes ages to heal or it just doesn't heal at all, and then it's just like it's other knocks build up on top of the knocks they have, and I'm kind of like, I don't know how long I can keep doing it.
Yeah.
You know, and I was kind of wondering there at the weekend, like, how do you know when the time is to retire? If you don't get a major injury, you know, if there's not like an individual moment that's like, boom, I just broke my leg or did my ACL, okay, yeah. It's my time.
Yeah, yeah.
I'd rather retire before that happens, you know?
Yeah, so you want to go out on your own terms and not have it dictated for you.
Yeah, yeah. But I don't know how to make that decision.
Okay.
Because sometimes I think, okay, you know, when I go downhill, I didn't exactly have a great season this year, but then I just had, like, the playing that game on Sunday and the super dramatic ending after a real slobber knock of a game and scoring a touchdown there with, like, 7 seconds left on the clock, that was a magical moment. You know, I'll remember that forever.
Yeah.
And I thought the 2016 bowl, the touchdown we had at 10 seconds left, was probably more meaningful, but I thought, we'll never top that. But then we just had this awesome game, and it's such a great feeling to win in that way. I'm kind of like, Jesus, you know, if I retired after this bowl, I might miss the opportunity to have more of them. And I have my whole life then to not play. I only have so long to actually play. So I don't know. And I think that's kind of what drives me. While I'm doing it, I may as well just play to win.
Fair enough. Can't argue with that. Let's talk about your opponents in this week's Shamrock Bowl 32, yeah. The Cork Admirals. So this is pretty much the best of three games, really. Game one, you guys won that 14-13 way back in April. That was a home game for you. And 2 weeks later in game two, you lost 21-16, and that was down in Cork. So two really close games so far. Yeah. Are you expecting another tight scoreline this Sunday in Tallaght Stadium?
I think I'd be crazy to expect anything other than that.
Yeah,
you know, I don't think we're going to get blown out. Like, let me put it that way. But I don't think we'll blow them out. Yeah, and as you said, like, honestly, the Cork team this year remind me a lot of there was a great Cork team in like 2007, 2008, and it was the same every time we played them. We traded wins. We beat them, and then they beat us, and it always came down to the wire where other teams could have won, and that's the way it was this year. Even when we beat them 14-13 this year, they missed a 2-point conversion that could have put them ahead.
Yeah,
probably. To win the game, and when they beat us, we had a fumble on the goal line that possibly could have put us maybe in a position to win the game. So they're games that really could go either way. And you know, Cork are a really, really good team. They've got size and speed. They're a really big team. Very difficult to play against a team with that much beef up front. You know, so they're overall just a classy unit.
Obviously, okay.
They are. It's great to see Cork back like that, and it's also great to see a team that came from the IAFL1.
Yeah.
Their second year in the SBC, they're already in the Shamrock Bowl.
Yeah, it is. It's fantastic to see them back, and you've obviously seen plenty of footage of them by now at this late stage in the season. So, in your opinion, who are the playmakers for Cork Admirals that you'll need to keep an eye on Sunday?
To start with their offense, they've got playmakers everywhere. Like, their quarterback, Stephen Hayes, is really good, and he's got some great receivers out there. I'm particularly fond of a guy called Jan Bassini, who was on the under-20s Ireland team there that I was coaching earlier this season.
Yep.
He can kind of score from anywhere, but they've got receivers across the board, and the running back as well, Philip, is extremely good, also on the under-20s. But really, I think the star of the show on their offense is their offensive line. It's very hard to pick out a particular guy on an O-line, as you know yourself. Like,
yeah.
Their O-line is really solid, really well coached. They're all big, strong, fast, and they can move. And when they run something like outside zone, you've got tackles running across the field and getting out in front of running backs. But when they do pass protection as well, you know, they were able to do a good job against the likes of Simon Mackey on the Rebels, who's a defensive end, is extremely difficult to block. But in the last game, they actually did quite a good job of blocking him. And he'll hate that I said that, so I hope that motivates him on Sunday, if you're listening to Mackey. But then on defense, and I'm not just going to name everybody on the team, even though I know I did that. Like, but on defense, I would say in particular, there's a couple of guys. First of all, their free safety, Kate O'Keefe, is an absolute baller. I'm not sure how long he's been playing football for this year, but from what I've seen of him and from what I've heard about him, but I've actually seen quite a lot of him, he's super fast. He makes plays all over the place. He sometimes plays on offense as well. He's an absolute threat. Because that free safety, not only does he, you know, cover a lot of ground and make some interceptions, he's able to make tackles on plays that would otherwise be touchdowns just by being the fastest guy in the field. So Kid O'Keefe is one to watch. There's another guy, one of their linebackers, Harris Monaghan, really good linebacker. He's really got a nose for the ball. He's super hard to stop when he wants to just like bust into the backfield, but he's really great at flowing and reading what's happening in front of him as well. Their whole defense is really good, but I just want to highlight those two guys because I'm definitely, you know, have a healthy respect for them.
Sure, yeah, yeah.
You know, they're factored in. There's something that I want to make sure. I'd be very happy if I could neutralize them in the game, but I don't think I will be able to. I think that, you know, there are a couple of guys that we need to watch out for.
Okay, you'll do your best to keep the ball away from those lads. All right, we'll leave it at that. Andy, thanks a million for taking time out of your prep for the game. Best of luck. Thanks for coming on and speaking to Paddy Pigskin. Much appreciated.
Thanks for having me, dude. Best of luck. And if you have any fantasy tips, hit me up because I'll be drafting in a couple of weeks.
Will do, man. Take care.
All right. Bye-bye.
So my second guest on this week's episode of Paddy Pigskin is Stuart Donaldson, who is the club president of the Cork Admirals. Stuart, thanks very much for taking your time out of your week and preparation for the Shamrock Bowl. Come on to chat to us.
Not at all. Thanks for having us on.
And as well as being the president, you are actually an active player on the squad. Is that correct?
Well, active is a kind of an argument that can be made, but certainly I kid up in a way. And look, whatever the coaches give me, I'll take, you know.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I've seen a few action shots of you with the ball, so I wasn't sure if they were from this season or from last year. So I just wanted to clarify that.
We've some good photoshoppers on here, you know, putting into all sorts of great stuff, you know.
And you're in the Irish Navy, if I'm not mistaken.
That's right, yeah. So I'm in the Navy since I left school. Followed the father in, like, so. Yeah,
fair enough. Well, first of all, thanks very much for manning our Irish waters. That's much appreciated. So, should I call you by captain, or what's your official rank?
No, you can call me Stuart. It's fine. Lieutenant's my rank, but Stuart's fine. I'd like to get away from the day job as well, too.
Fair enough. First of all, congrats on getting to Cork's first Shamrock Bowl since 2007. Which is an 11-year wait for the Admirals, which I just realised before coming on, it's Cork's only Shamrock Bowl up until now. So that must be massive down there to you, back in the big game.
Yeah, absolutely. I suppose the club folded in 2013 and it's been a long building process to get to this. But we're delighted to be back in the Shamrock Bowl for sure.
Yeah, so I actually had the talking point written down. Obviously, you went through a rough couple of years not long ago. You said it was 2014. You had to really work your way back up through IFL1 and now into the Shamrock Bowl conference. So what was the catalyst behind, you know, it's really been a meteoric rise back to the summit of football in Ireland. So what was kind of, what really spurred on that change and that desire to get back to where Cork used to be?
I think the last time we were in the semi-final was in 2008. And I think really the club started going into the transitional period from then. Unfortunately, then the 2013 season, we just, you know, from health and safety point of view, we just couldn't really compete, and you know, we were turning up the games with 11 and 12 players, and you just can't do that at this level of football. So we came back in 2013. It was a bit of a baptism of fire. I think our first game was against UCD, and I think they put 50 on us, and we were kind of thinking, oh God, like, you know, should we have come back? But you know, look, we slowly built up. It seems like a meteoric rise. I mean, when you say like 2 years ago today, in actual fact, we were in the IFL Bowl, one bowl versus the Trojans. But look, it's been hard work put on and off the field, growing each year, setting our goals and trying to achieve them. So you know, not really a meteoric rise. But you know, a lot of hard work, I suppose, going into it on and off the field.
Absolutely, yeah. And it seems like you've got a lot of young talent there, a lot of guys that have featured on the Irish under 20 panel. So is that kind of injection of youth, has that revitalized some of the vets that may have been around since, you know, before things kind of went sour a little bit? Is it starting to get that good combination of young guys who are new to football, bringing that kind of extra level of athleticism, and then the experience of the older guys?
Absolutely, I think we've got that blend pretty good this year, even to the level that as those guys you've mentioned, you know, played youth football, last October, November, came in and made the 20s panel, and I think four out of the five are starters for us at this stage. You know, so as you say, bringing in that little bit more hunger, you know, sometimes they can revitalise things, and we can pass on our, I suppose, the vets then can pass on our experience onto them as well. So it's been a good mix.
Yeah, absolutely. Anytime you see teams make a good championship run, it's normally they have that nice little blend, as you say, of the young guys who are hungry to win, and also the experience that the older guys bring in. So talk us through your semi-final game against UCD, which on paper, I suppose, it was a huge upset in Belfield. You guys were 14-13 winners. UCD even had a chance to win it with a 2-point conversion at the end, which you guys stuffed. So just like the Rebels, must have been an absolute crazy mix of emotions going on down there, was it?
Yeah, I mean, if you take into account the the wild card game was an even crazier kind of emotional experience. We've had a couple of emotional roller coaster games this year. Look, I suppose there's a bit of a redemption tour feel to it in that we'd lost to both the Panthers and UCD in the regular season. So, you know, look, that was on our minds. You know, we had a bit of a hiccup in the regular season. But look, you know, I suppose we set out a goal at the start of the year to make the Shamrock Bowl. And, you know, we were, I suppose, hell-bent on getting there, you know, hell or high water. But, a real back-and-forward game, you know, and really have to give credit to UCD for going for it, going for two at the end. And I suppose we were lucky Kid O'Keefe, our safety, was able to make it across and push the runner, you know, out of bounds. But, yeah, huge, huge emotions. I suppose, like, from where we've come from in 2013 to making a Shamrock Bowl has been an emotional experience for sure.
Yeah, and your team has certainly shown a lot of heart and guts to win. You know, two games there that really came down to the wire and you came out on the winning side. So hats off there. You've probably, maybe not as much as you've liked, but you've added a whole new dimension of drama to playoff football in Ireland. I mean, like, it's very, very, very rare that games go to double overtime in football in Ireland. So I'm sure your heart has probably taken a pound in the last few weeks.
Yeah, we certainly would have preferred if it was finished in regular time. But again, hats off to the Panthers who pushed it all the way. They were, I think, 24 points down at one stage. And to come back, like, that just shows the heart that they had in their team as well on the day too. Like, but look, we were lucky that we were able to sneak the win there, and also sneak the win in the semi-final too as well.
Yeah, and now you're here at Shamrock Bowl 32. So I just spoke to Andy Dennehy there earlier, who you'll face this Sunday in Tallaght Stadium. So he's been in this situation countless times. I forgot to even ask him how many Shamrock Bowls he's in. I know this is his 10th that he is going for. Very, very experienced player in Irish American football. Most, if not, maybe most of the Admirals haven't been to a Shamrock Bowl. Maybe some of them were on the team in 2007. So how have you prepped them for such a big occasion? I know you've played games in a stadium environment before down at Cork IT, but playing for the championship in front of maybe 1,000 or 2,000 people, has a lot of the prep gone into this game? Has it been mental as well as physical, just prepping a lot of these young guys for what's coming on Sunday?
Look, I think, as you've said there, there's a lot of experience on the Rebel side. You know, played the last couple of Shamrock Bowls, and I've played in most of them, probably played in multiple ones. So, I mean, from that point of view, you'd have to say they're favourites, even though we split the regular season games. You know, that experience of, and experiencing that setup, you know, I'm playing, you know, Atlantic Cup games and playing against, you know, Division III college teams as well also. They'd certainly be considered favourites in that regard. Look, you know, I suppose we have played in four bowls in the last 5 years, if you take into account the IFL One Bowl. I think even our own event there last year, we had 2,500 people through the gate over the course of the day.
Wow.
So, look, our guys, you know, I suppose our guys are, you know, they have played in that environment, but for sure, Rebels will have the advantage on the experience front.
Yeah, I remember my first Shamrock Bowl, I was a rookie, and it was in Tallaght Stadium, and just being in that dressing room right under the crowd and hearing the crowd and the music and all, I was absolutely shitting myself. So I can imagine there's definitely going to be a little bit of nerves there, but you just got to get on with the job and put it to the back of your mind and just get on with your task. You know, you can't let those nerves affect you. So hopefully you guys can deal with that this Sunday. I also asked Andy who I felt the danger men for the Admirals were. So in the essence of fairness, I got to ask you the same question. Who are you going to be looking out for on the Rebels roster in the Shamrock Bowl?
I think the Rebels players, you know, there's a huge amount of guys that just roll off the tongue that everybody knows around the league, you know. Andy Dennehy, Jack Fagan, you know, we played against Pete McMahon even when he was a former Bulldog, always gave us a tough game. Wello, Simon Mackey, Conrad Cook, you know, we can go on all day. I suppose there's lots of names on that Rebels, you know, roster. So, look, we know they're a balanced team. You know, they're coming into the game, you know, with, I think, over 130 points over the last three games with two shutouts. So we certainly won't be underestimating them, or, you know, but we're in the bowl now. We're not here to make up the numbers.
Absolutely.
We set it out as our goal to make it at the start of the year. Our goal last year was to make playoff football, and we did that. So look, we've been setting goals and make them year on year.
Yeah.
But look, we're going to go up there and look not to roll out as all the I suppose, the cliches, but you know, we've certainly given it our all on the day.
Yeah, and I mean, you have beaten them, so you know that your guys can go up against the Rebels and beat them. And you know, this is essentially the deciding game, game three, or the rubber match, as they may say, yeah, over here. So you guys, I'm sure there's a level of confidence there, knowing that you've gone up against this squad before and you've beaten them.
I suppose Paul Grogan alluded to there, I think, when he was talking on the semi-final, though, that you know, the Rebels do have that, you know, way of getting it right at the right time of the season. You know, it's I think they've added some veteran players back since then. So, look, it's going to be a tough game, very tough game. We're not, you know, going into it thinking just because we've beaten them in the last game out that it's going to be an easy game at all. You know, again, just to say, look, the Rebels probably are favourites, but we're not going to be lying down and taking anything, you know?
Yeah, if I don't even know. I know back in the day you used to be able to bet on these games on Paddy Power, but I don't know if there's a...
I think that's gone now.
Yeah. I don't know if there's any odds out for the game, but I can't imagine either side being heavy favourites, you know, given that you've both beaten each other. So you mentioned there earlier on that you had 2,000 to 2,500 people at a game there in CIT. So will you have many fans making the trip up from Cork for the game?
And all of our own players anyway certainly will bring, as like always most teams, I suppose, will be bringing family and friends and so on and so forth, and encouraging as many people as we can to get out. So look, you know, we're probably expecting a modest number because it's in Dublin, but you know, I'm pretty sure knowing our fans who've been there during the season and have been there at all our home games, that they'll be pretty loud and they'll get behind us, no doubt about it.
Brilliant. And I have to say, I've kind of been keeping tabs on the Cork Admirals on the social media side and promotion side. He has done an absolutely fantastic job on that end of things as well. So I think you're really kind of blaze a trail there for teams to catch up with you on the you know, the side of things that goes on off the field. So fair play to you in that regard.
I think there was certainly, you know, we looked at teams like the Rebels who do a very good job, and the Trojans, and you know, that's the kind of, they'd set the bar when we were coming back up to the SBC, and we kind of thought, like, you know, setting goals on and off the field, and look, they were, you know, two teams that we were able to follow and have a look and see how they were doing things as well, you know.
Absolutely, you've certainly done that. Well, I know it's late over there in Ireland, Stuart, so I'll let you go. Best of luck this Sunday. Hopefully it's another cracker of a game. It sounds like it should be, in continuation of what's gone on in the playoffs. So best of luck. Hopefully.
Do you really mean best of luck? No, Gary, no.
No. Paddy has to be impartial. So I want both teams giving it 100%, and may the best team win at the end of the day. So thanks very much for coming on and taking time out to chat to us, Stuart. Much appreciated.
Thanks, Gary. Appreciate it.
Take care.
Okay, bye-bye.
And that will do it for episode 38 of Paddy Pigskin, our IAFA Shamrock Bowl special. Make sure you get down there if you are in the Dublin area, or you listen to us and you're in Ireland. Get down to Talla Stadium in Dublin, home of Shamrock Rovers. It's on at 2 o'clock, Dublin Rebels against Cork Admirals. It should be an absolute fantastic game. It's the pinnacle of football in Ireland, between two really good teams at the top of their game this season. Can't highlight enough how much you should go and check this out. I think it's only €5 for adult tickets, and like free in for under 16s or something like that. I'm sure all the details are on the Irish American Football Association's website. That's all for us this week. Keep on our social media pages. Have a few announcements coming up on Facebook, and one or two of them on Instagram. Got some live podcasts coming up. And wherever you're listening to us, if you fancy leaving us a review, always helpful, or you can always review us on our Facebook page. So thanks for tuning in to episode 38 of Paddy Pigskin. I'm Gary Somerville. Until next time, where we will have less slant and more slauncha. Take care. She like, I heard all your niggas stay where you stay. How so big, I haven't seen them boys in 2 days. Bitch, I use a walkie-talkie just to get a beverage. I saw my parents split up right after the wedding. That told my ass to stay committed, fuck the credit. Bitch, check the numbers, I'm the one who really get it. I told y'all motherfuckers, man, this shit is not a love song. This a doing me and only God can judge song. I do not know what the fuck you thought it was song. Pop some fucking champagne in a tub song. Nigga, just because song. What's the move? Can I tell the truth? If I was doing this for you, then I have nothing left to prove. Nah, this for me though. I'm just trying to stay alive and take care of my people. And they don't have no award for that. Trophies, trophies. And they don't have no award for that.
Shit don't come with trophies, ain't no envelopes to open. I just do it cause I'm supposed to, nigga.